Welcome to the third demonstration session. So today we have one analytical exercise and then five computer exercises. So first of all, the analytical exercise identification multivariate models. In A part, we were asked to explain what are the undesirable consequences that arise estimating one and two separately using the OLS. So here, the problem is, look at the equation one and two, you'll notice that equation one has equation two on the right-hand side, as well as equation one has equation two has equation one on the right-hand side. In other words, these two variables are simultaneously determining each other. That means OLS assumptions are not valid. When something happens in one equation, it'll simultaneously affect something in the other equation. So it's like saying that both equations are moving at the same time, but there's no stable point in the system. B part, if in equation one, the term y1t is set to zero, what happens? So when this term is set to zero, then there's no simultaneity problem anymore. In other words, the equation two is exhaustionless in the system. So when something, even though it's affecting the equation one, the equation one is not affecting equation two. So when this equation is determined exogenously in the system, so this equation is determined first and then the first equation, so the system can be estimated. There is no longer endogeneity bias. C part, about the order condition. Okay, how to check the order condition? Calculate the number of endogenies and independent variables in the system. So in the first equation one, U1 and U2 are endogenous variables, and then we have two endogenous variables, but then we have three independent variables, the independent terms and x1 and x2. And when the numbers of the independent variables is larger than the endogenous variable, the system is not, the equation is not identified. So equation one is not identified. But in equation two, we have two endogenous variables, U2 and U1, and then two independent variables, the independent term and X1, so the system is just identified. So that was first exercise. Then the second. So let's look at the R. So we're asked to do VAR estimation and applying that to the exchange rate data. So we have three currencies, Euro, British pound, and Japanese yen, all valued against one US dollar. And our data is almost 20 years, and that's in total of almost 5,000 observations. So let's read the data and do the necessary transformations and then start looking at the system. First, the necessary libraries, how to highlight shiftless arrows, run control and enter. So assume you already familiar how to read this code. Let's load the data. And then let's start looking at the graphs. So above, we have changes in the euro exchange rate valued against US dollar, then middle British pound values against US dollar, and then Japanese yen valued against US dollar. All of these are changes. So first of all of this series are nicely oscillating around the mean value. There's some stable mean. How about the variance? We observe that there's the variance changes over time. Sometimes the variability is higher and sometimes smaller. And then in the case of British pound, we observe there's a huge outlier here. What is that? That's the Brexit referendum, June 2016. And then there are a lot of outliers in the Japanese yen. So the variability of series is not constant, and then there are these outlier events. Those are the two observations to take into notice. So let's start building the VAR model. First of all, let's organize the data here. The ordering of the variable is really important because the ordering determines the heterogeneity in the system. So When we apply this ordering, we assume that the euro is the most exogenous variable in the system, and then the British pound, and then the Japanese yen. But that's the data, and then let's look at the VAR system. Let's just estimate with two logs. So these are the results of the VAR estimation. So each of these equation is just standard OLS, nothing special there with lax applied. So this is the equation estimated. For example, in the first case, the changes in the euro changes, relative changes in the euro, and then we have first lag of all equations in the system, and then the second lag. If we look at the statistical significance here, the stars, we observe that there's not, the second lag seems not at, or adds only noise. Same applies also to the British pound, nothing in the second lag. And also as well as Japanese yen, only the first lag seems to be statistically significant. So that was just an observation. In the next part, so we found out the two lags is not, the second lag is not bringing anything additional, and then let's just estimate one lag model. Rather, let's then try information criteria to determine the lag. Okay, so according to information criteria, one is the optimal lag. Here, the Akaike and Schwarz are the most important measure. Both of these say lag with one lag. So let's estimate the model with one lag. quick comparison. So let's just check one equation. So this is the earlier estimation. We removed the other lag, so let's see how it affects the results. This is the only significant parameter here, minus 0.04. So let's see what happens when the second lag is removed. The results stay the same. So removing the lag did not change anything. So that's a good sign. The estimation is robust. So according to the Akaike, it's one lag model. Next, in the next part, let's compare this one lag model to the four lag model. So here the underlying assumption is that when we estimate the OLS, we are assuming that the error term is behaves well. That means it's there's no heteroscedasticity or the correlation. But if we look at this graph here on the right-hand side, for sure the variability of this series is not constant. So let's fit. So it could well be the case that our model is missing something. So let's compare this one lag model to the four lag model to see how the results change. Let's estimate both of these models and compare their log likelihood functions. And then let's calculate the likelihood ratio test. This is the test statistic, and this is the critical value. So here, the null hypothesis is that there's no difference between the model. This is our test statistics, 30. The critical value of the probability distribution is above 50. So the null stays in power. VAR1 is there's no need to add additional lags. VAR1 model is doing fine. And then in the sixth part, let's do impulse response and such variance decomposition. Okay. So first of all, let's estimate the impulse responses. This is for the Euro series. So here, what we're estimating here, it is important. I'll write down the matrix. It's the B matrix in this time, and its structure is the first row of the matrix is just one and zero and zero. The second is, let's just name it beta one, one and zero, and third, beta two one and beta. Excuse me, B1, beta 3, 2, and 1. So, as I made a typo, I write the matrix again. This is the beta matrix. The first row is like this. The second is like this. And the third is like this. So, the diagonal is 1. That we're using a normalizing assumption. So here, this normalization means that the value is one, that if we look at the standard deviation of the series, null 58. So if you look at the graph, that's the value there. If there's a one standard deviation shock, the impact is like this. So when we look at the impulse responses, the shock is only present at the value it happens, but next day everything has vanished. So that's the system here. So when there's a one standard deviation shock in the Euro returns, it'll have an effect of 0.3 for the British pound returns and below 0.2 to the Japanese yen. So this when the shock one series disorder impacts in another equation. Let's look at the British pound. So this is the impact of the British pound. When there's a shock in pound returns, that's normalized series. So if we look at the standard deviation of the series, it should be around 0.52 or something like that, 0.59. So that's the one standard deviation shock in the series. There's something wrong with the scaling here. It's not perfect. It's not perfect. So the shock is around 0.6 and the impact is there. When there's a shock to the British pound, nothing's happening in the Japan yen, but there's a lagged shock in the euro. So the question is, why is this so? Why isn't the impact immediately? And this is because of the strict frictions of the model. So here, when I estimated the bound, I estimated this equation. So this equation means that bound can affect a Japanese yen, but not the euro returns. So in other words, why this lagged impact happens here, it's by mathematical construct. Or in other words, you could just think about the algorithm makes it so that the shocks happens with lag. And why is this so? Because our structural identification is based on the Solensky decompositions, and we need to set these zero values so that our system can be even identified. So here we are applying really, really simple identification method. But let's look at the Japanese yen. So here, given that the yen is the last on the last place at the system, we assume that when there's shock impact to the yen, both euro returns and bound returns have a lag response. So let's see whether that's the case. That's exactly the case because of this mathematical procedure we are applying to Japanese yen cannot affect immediately euro or pound, but the response is lag. Nevertheless, the response is really small, meaning that it's economically irrelevant. But when there's a shock in the pound, in the yen, the effect is like that. So here, before studying these impulse responses further, let's move to the second moment. So is impulse responses are related to the central tendencies of this series. So let's look about how the variabilities spill over across the system. So this is the variance decomposition. So here, when there's a variability shock in the euro returns, the shock remains quite, the variability remains in the euro series. There's only minor spillover to the British pound, but not much. So that's basically like zero. How about the British pound? So there seems to be some connection between the variability of the euro and British pound, but no connection with the Japanese yen. This is no surprise in a sense to think this in simple terms. Britain is an island quite close to the Euro area and Europe in general, so for sure they're trading all the time. That's doing real business, and then there's currency trading between these two currencies. So for sure, it's reasonable to assume that they're connected. How about the Japanese yen? So there's a shock. The most of if there's a shock in variability of the yen returns, it'll stay in the yen, but there's my minor spillover to the Euro series. So in the last part, the most interesting thing is that are the variabilities of the pound shock related to the Euro series. We applied a procedure that said that not. So let's do a minor change and change the place of the British pound and the euro in the system. So here, as the pound is first, it has the highest exogeneity in the system, and the euro has the second highest. So let's change their place and see whether the results stay around the same. And that's the VAR model of one. So first, let's estimate the euro return. So here, note, euro is the second highest in the system. So we're estimating that equation first. So our assumption is that when there's a shock in the euro, it will not have any impact to the British pound. That is exactly so. So it's like British euro and British pound switched places. There's some typo over there. It should be. So in the earlier case, the British pound had this impact and the euro had this impact. So now we can see, now according to our result, euro responds to the shocks in the British pound as it should. But then let's look at the British pound. We should see that they're both connected. Both of them are affected by the shocks in each other series. And that is exactly the case there. When there's a shock in pound series, the shock is also affecting euro series. And when there's a shock in euro series, its shocks is also affecting, it's also affecting. So if there's a shock in pound series, it's affecting the euro. And last time we observed the opposite, that when there's a shock in the euro, it's affecting the pound series. Before we change the ordering in the matrix. How about the Japanese yen? It should be similar like earlier. Something will Shock will only affect Japanese yen, but then there's minor spillovers to the other series, and that's exactly so. So like before, let's look at the variabilities of the series. So impulse responses are the central tendencies of this series. That's the mean value, central tendencies, and then let's look at the variances, the second moment. The variabilities of the series. So here there's a shock in the variability of the pound. No impact to the euro. Okay, so the variability remains in the British pound, but then the second shock in the euro, or the second variable in the system, The results are like the mirror of the last time. So last time we had the euro returns there and the pound returns there, and the parameters are like the same. So there's a connection between the series. And with the Japanese yen, the result is like earlier, with minor differences. But most of the shock remains, most of the variability remains in the Japanese yen. Okay, so this was exercise. This was second exercise, and then let's look at the third exercise. So third exercise is about interest rate data. Studying the data using modeling interest rate data using VAR system. So we have our data, we have a long bond, 10-year bond, and 3-month T-bill, money market bond. And then we are introducing a new variable, that's the US Economic Policy Uncertainty Index. But the uncertainty in the economy and studying how the interest rates are related to the economic uncertainty. First, let's load the data. Okay, that's the economic uncertainty index. So just by eyeballing, we observe that after around 2008, the uncertainty has gone higher. So what has happened there? That was the outbreak of the financial crisis. Before that, there was less uncertainty in the economy, but after that, more uncertainty. This is a 10-year US government bond. So it's showing the downward trend in interest rates. So this is really long-term phenomenon that over time the interest rates have globally drifted downwards. And that's how it's related to the interest rate spread. That's the difference between the 10-year bond and 3 months T-bill. So here, there are times when they're equal. That's because of the zero lower bound. So when the short-term interest rates were cut to their effective lower bound around zero, there's basically no difference between the difference between the long-term and short-term interest rate is the yield of the long-term interest rate minus zero. And how is this related to the economic uncertainty like this? So here we observe that the uncertainty index is close, seems to closely follow the interest rate spread until around 2008, and after that, the connection disappears. Why could this be the case that the connection has disappeared? So let's compare. Let's change, instead of using 10-year bond, let's use a 3-month bond and see what's the difference. So here we observe that when the interest rate hit their effective lower bound, it could be the case that the uncertainty index loosed is started to follow something else instead of this short-term interest rate. So nevertheless, let's study this what really happens here? So before 2008, there seems to be a correlation between the series, but after that, everything seems to break down. So first of all, let's build a VAR system. In the first data set, we have three variables. All of these, we have both interest rates and the uncertainty index in levels. And then in the second variables, in the second case, we have the spread and then the changes in the uncertainty index. So let's compare these results. Using a 12 lag model. So then we are asked to estimate 12 lag models in each case and then start doing analysis. So let's assume that the model has 12 lags. So I'll have to check how many. So we have monthly data. That means monthly data means economically this could be some, this could control some annual effect in the series, annuality in the time series. So let's just assume that there's some annuality and see what happens. So overall, we have 12 lags. And if we just look one of these equations, one of the estimations, check the statistical significances here, it seems that adding these lags is unnecessary. It doesn't bring much. However, we have that model there, and then let's do the same for the second data set. So that was for the first data and for the second data set. And again, just by glancing the results, okay, here there are a little bit more statistical significance, but not much. So overall, doing this really simple estimation, according to this really simple estimation, it is not really, it doesn't help to add these additional lags. But nevertheless, let's study this more, how many lags we should have in this model. So first of all, let's calculate the likelihood functions. And compare. Okay, so the first question is, which model to use? Should we use three lag model or two lag models? So here, let's calculate the information criteria, both of these models. So according to Akaike, multivariate Akaike information criteria, so smaller the information criteria, better to fit here. So here, the two lag model has a smaller value. So according to this really simple measure, it seems to be that the analysis should be done using the two variable model and not three. That was according to Akaike. So let's see again whether Schwarz information criteria says the same. Okay, the results are the same. So according to this really, both of these information criteria, really simple measure used here, we should continue with the two variable model instead of the three variable model. Okay, then we are asked to do the analysis with six lags. So here, earlier we used 12 lags, but it could be well be the case that there are some our model could capture some spurious noise or spurious correlation in the data, and that'll affect the results. So let's change the number of the lag and see what's the result. So let's calculate the models using six lags. So we calculated both of these models, and then we're just calculating IC criteria here. Also, we were asked just to estimate the model with 6 lakhs and save the residuals. We did that, and then we were asked to show, and then we were just asked to calculate the general information criteria. So let's do that. So for the first set, data set, according to the information criteria, okay, that says that it's a 6 lakh model, and then just Akaike says that 6 lakh model, and then Schwartz says it's 2 lakh model. And let's do the same for the second data set. According to that, it's 7 lakh model and 1 lakh model. Okay. So that was the C part. Then let's look at the D part. Construct the log likelihood test ratios and study the number of the lags. How many restrictions are there in the systems? So let's do that. If you want to, you can print the summary statistic. It's not needed here. The most important thing is the likelihood ratio, log likelihood values. Those are them now. There seems to be not huge change between the values. So the first one was, this was for the 6 lakh model, and this was for the 12 lakh model. So should we continue with 6 or 12 lakhs? Let's calculate the likelihood ratio test, and the value is like that. And what's the critical value? Okay, it's below that. So here the null hypothesis is there's no difference between the model. And when the test statistic is smaller than the critical value, the null stays in power. So the restricted model is better. So when the restricted model is better, we should continue with the model with lower number of lags. So if we added these 6 additional lags, our model does not improve. It's, in other words, it's unnecessary to do that. So let's continue with the 6 lakh model. And then in the next part, we are asked to compare the 6 lakh model to the 1 lakh model. So let's calculate that model with 1 lakh. That's the value. And then let's do the likelihood ratio test. The null hypothesis is there's no difference between the model. We calculate the test statistic over 200, and the critical value is 75. So when the test statistic is this much higher, we reject the null, and this means that unrestricted model works better. So in other words, it's better to continue with the model with 6 lakhs rather than 1 lakh. Let's check this result using multivariate information criteria. 6 lakh, that's for the 6 lakh model. Okay, they're relatively the same, no difference there. And then free variable model, smaller value. Okay, so if we compare this information criteria, this and this, so according to the information criteria, it'd be better to use 1 lakh model, but according to the likelihood ratio test, it's better to continue with the likelihood ratio test. It's better continue with the higher number of lakhs. So in other words, when we are thinking about the robustness, before I said that, let's check the 3 lakh models. Okay, there's no big change also there. So in other words, when we are thinking about choosing the number of lakhs to the model, we should do this multiple different tests. And here our result was that we got contradictory results using different measures. So in other words, there's no Bible that says what's the absolute truth. We found out that according to likelihood ratio test, it's better if we have higher numbers of lags, but according to information criteria, lower number of lags. Though this means that there's something underlying structure in the model that's affecting that we're getting these contradictory results. So in other words, we're most likely missing, our model is missing something. So it could be the case that there's some, for example, there's heterogeneity in the processes that's affecting this calculation of these test statistics. But in this exercise, we'll leave the issue on that. So here, the most important point is that it is possible that different tests produce different results. And if we want to have truly understand what's happening there, we should continue our do some further analysis. But here we'll leave it on. Here we do not continue because if we would continue, we would most likely start applying some methods that are not the topic of today. So we'll leave this exercise here. Then the fourth exercise, it's about Kranger causality. So okay, let's start. Kranger causality. Kranger causality and impulse responses for the macro variables. Okay, so we'll take from the given from the previous exercise that one lag model is reasonable and that was according to information criteria. So here we just assume that the information criteria gives us a better, more accurate lag than the log likelihood test. That is just the assumption we continue with. So let's build the model and start doing Kranger causality test. And first for the So we set our sample beginning from the beginning of the 99. So okay, so we have we just begin here, nothing else there. That's for that data. That was for the EPU index. And that's for the interest rates. And first, we'll build two system model using EPU index and long-term interest rates. So here, let's check the information criteria of this system. So here, according to Akaike, it's 4, but according to Schwartz, it's 2. Let's run the VA. So first, let's run the VAR model using 4 lags. Let's estimate that and check the Kranger causality. So here, the null hypothesis is that long-term interest rate is not the lags of the long-term interest rates are not useful in predicting the level of the uncertainty index. So here, p-value is well below the critical value, 0.05, well below that. So that means that we reject the null, meaning that the long-term interest rates are helpful and useful in forecasting the economic uncertainty index. So that was with the 4 lags. Let's leave 2 lakhs, throw 2 lakhs away and see how the result changes. There's no change. The p-value is still below 0.05. So the long-term interest rates are useful in for forecasting the change, forecasting changes in the economic uncertainty. Then let's build another model. Here we have changes in the uncertainty and long-term interest rates. So earlier we had level uncertainty in levels, now in relative changes. Let's check the information criteria according to Akaike again 4 and according to Schwartz 2. So first with 4 lakh model, Granger causality. Look at the p-value well below 0.05, so that means we reject the null. Long-term interest rates are useful for predicting or are Granger causing the changes in economic uncertainty. Let's throw 2 lakhs away and the result stays the same. Again, they are helpful for predicting changes in the economic uncertainty index. They Granger cause changes in economic uncertainty index. Next, let's use changes in the economic uncertainty and short-term interest rates. According to information criteria, Akaike says 9 is the optimal lakhs, but Schwartz says 3. So here, let's see what happens. 9 lakhs. Here, the null stays in power. So short-term interest rates are not Granger causing changes in the economic uncertainty. So let's see what happens if we throw some lakhs away. Okay, the p-value becomes even higher. So here again, the null hypothesis stays in power. Short-term interest rate do not Granger cause changes in the economic uncertainty here. We threw 6 lakhs away, and there was this change in the there was quite change in the calculation of the test statistics. So this means that when we had higher number of lakhs here in the model, it introduced some spurious correlation in the model, and because of this spurious correlation, the p-value was smaller. But when we threw additional lags away, the p-value became most likely more accurate. It could other possibility to think of this is that our model is wrong, but here, if assuming that our model is correct, adding these additional lags in the model only introduces some spurious correlation in the model. Then the next part. So here, let's build another system. Okay, here we're changing the place of the variables. So earlier, in the earlier case, the economic uncertainty. Okay, so here we are actually let's look at the impulse responses and the variance decomposition. With 3 lakh model, that was the better impulse responses. So here, when there's a shock in economic uncertainty, there's a strong immediate effect into the same series. The next series in next step, next value, it'll turn into negative. So that means that when there's a huge shock happening, it's overshooting, and next day it'll start correcting. So here there's a negative impact and negative impact and ne negative impact, and and positive impact. So in other words, in think about there's some company like Tesla says that its earnings are better than what was expected in the market. There's a huge immediate increase in the stock share price, but in the next day it could start correcting downwards. So that's overshooting, in other words. But there's no impact in the long-term interest rate. Let's see another way around. Okay, but when there's a shock in long-term interest rate, the economic uncertainty. So when the interest rates are going upwards, economic uncertainty is going downwards. So this is most likely related to the safe haven status of the US government bonds. They are really they are risk-free assets. So when long-term interest rates are going higher, it's most likely a sign that economy is booming. So uncertainty then is going downwards. What about the variance decomposition? Nothing much happening there when there's a change. So impulse responses were the central tendencies of this series, the mean first moment, then let's look at the second moment, the variability. So when there's a shock in the variability here, the variability will remain in one series, only some minor spill over to other series. The same also applies to the interest rate. When there's a shock in interest rate, only minor portion of that spills into another series. So nothing much there. And then for the second part, okay, this is after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, the same analysis. So that's our sample. First, let's run the system and check the information criteria. So here we have two same variables again: economic uncertainty levels and long-term interest rates. According to Akaike, FIF is the optimal number of lag, and according to Schwartz, it's two. Let's run the system and then check the Kranger causality. Okay, here. So here, as the critical value is 0.05, and this value is just a little bit over that, the null stays in power. So long-term interest rate after the Lehman bankruptcy, the long-term interest rates have not been helpful in predicting the changes in the economic uncertainty. However, if we think that 0.1, that's the 10%, is the critical threshold, then there's some weak economic signal that you could interpret this result that long-term interest rate Kranger caused the economic uncertainty weakly, statistically weak way. Okay, let's eliminate some lags from our model and see what will happen in the results. Okay, the result is quite robust. Removing three lags did not change any results. They stay relatively the same, so not much there. The result is robust. The statistical significance at the 10% level, but not at 5% level. Only weak statistical significance. How about then the same analysis with the changes in the economic uncertainty and the long-term interest rate? That's the systems. Let's check the lag. It's 4 and 1 with 4 lags. No Kranger causality. Long-term interest rate do not Kranger cause or not helpful in forecasting the changes in the economic uncertainty index. Let's remove fill axe and see whether there's a change. No, there's not much change. There's not much change. Long-term interest rates are not helpful in predicting the changes in the economic uncertainty index. Then the same with short-term interest rates and changes in the economic uncertainty. Let's check the information criteria according to Kaike 5, but with Schwartz it's 4. The first case, p-value well above 0.05, the null stays in power. Do not Kranger-Post changes in the economic uncertainty index. And then if we removed 1 lakh, the results became even weaker. Nevertheless, short-term interest rates are not helpful or do not Kranger cause the changes in the economic uncertainty index after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers. Then let's do the impulse responses analysis using the changes in the economic uncertainty and the long-term interest rates and assume that its number of lag is 4. First, the impulse responses. Okay, here the result is almost the same as earlier when there's an increase in economic uncertainty. The next period, it will start correcting towards its mean value and the correction will continue, but after a few days, it'll go little bit over the mean value and then the correction continues. But nothing happening in the long-term interest rates. And same with when the shock in long-term interest rates, economic uncertainty, next period it will decrease and then it will start going upwards. How about the second moment, the variability? Nothing much happening there when there's a shock in the EPU. The variability will remain at the series. How about shock in the interest rates? It'll have some spillover to the economic uncertainty index. Okay, that was exercise number 4, and then the question number 5. So let's look at that. So that was the VAR analysis. Then let's start to look at the unit truth tests. Okay, this exercise is about unit truths. So first of all, let's load the necessary libraries and the data. First, let's check the stationary, let's check the unit whether there's a unit root in the VIX index. So here we are assuming that we have 1 lakh model. Okay, here. So the null hypothesis of the unit root test is that the series has a unit root. So then we calculate the test statistics, it's almost 5, and then we compare it to the critical value. Test statistics is way well higher than the critical value. That means that we reject the null. So when we reject the null that there's a unit root, it means that the series is stationary. But what happens if we add some additional lags in the model? So earlier we had only 1 lakh, so let's add 5 lakhs. And here we see there's a change in the calculation of the test statistic. Nevertheless, the null hypothesis is that there's a unit root. Then we calculate the test statistic and compare to the critical value. Nevertheless, we observe that it is higher than the, in absolute terms, than the 5% critical value. So this means that the series is stationary. However, we added some additional lags, and the calculation of the test statistic decreased. So it seems that there's some spurious correlation in the series that's affecting the modeling. Nevertheless, VIX index is stationary, and then let's check the Euro stock, what's the case. So here, the null hypothesis is unit root, that's the test statistic, and those are the critical values. So here, the null stays in power, it is smaller than these values, we have a unit root in the series. Then we'll add some lags in the model and see whether there's a change. The test statistic becomes a bit higher, but nevertheless, it is smaller than the critical values, meaning that the null stays in power, there's a unit root in the series. One way to deal with the unit root is taking the difference of the series. So we found that we have in levels we have a unit root. So let's study the relative changes, that is, take a difference of the series and see whether that affects the results. The null hypothesis is unit root, that's the test statistics on a little bit over 10. Critical value slides like this. So this is higher, we reject the null, our series is stationary, and if we add some lags, the result stays the same. Some decrease in the test statistic, but nevertheless, the value is still relatively, in a relative sense, it's huge test statistic. Nevertheless, here we also reject the null, we reject the unit root, the series is stationary. And same for the US stocks, that was for the Euro stocks, with one lags. Test statistic way smaller than the critical values, the null stays in power, unit root, let's add some lags. Do not change much. Test statistics way below the critical values, unit root. Let's take the difference. Way much higher than the critical values. Series is stationary. And the same applies here. Higher, we reject the null, the series is stationary. So next, earlier we just assumed some lags and calculated the unit root. Next, let's let the information criteria decide the optimal number of the lag and see whether this affects the results. So earlier, using one lag model and five lag model, we found that the VIX is stationary, but let's now let the information criteria select the value. Kaiku selects the value, and again, the test statistics way much larger than the critical values. We reject the null, series is stationary. How about the Euro stocks? In levels, smaller than the critical value, null stays in power, unit root. Changes, test statistics way higher than the critical value. We reject the null, the series is stationary. S&P 500. According to Akaike, test statistics way below the critical value, we reject the null, unit root. With differences, way much higher than the critical value, we reject the null, stationary. Next, we perform Philips Perron to check the robustness of this earlier results. We perform another unit root test. That's the Philips Perron test. For short, this is a generalization of the ADF augmented Digi-Filler test, in the sense that if the series have, we found some variability in the results earlier. So here we apply a unit root test that's better able to take into account the possible heteroscedasticity in the data or possible autocorrelation. So we do this test to check the robustness of the results. So VIX with 1 lakh, series is stationary. That's the critical value. That's the test statistic. And those are the critical values, way higher. We reject the null stationary. And then with 5 lakhs, the result stays the same. When the test statistic is higher than the critical values, we reject the null stationary. Same with the Euro stock in the earlier. The levels were at unit root. We get the same result. Test statistic smaller than the critical values. Null station power, unit root. Let's add some lags. Nothing much happens. Null station power, unit root. With differences, way much higher than the critical value, we reject the null stationarity. And the same also holds with adding some lags here. Series is stationary. Then with the S&P 500, in levels, smaller than the critical values, unit root, null station power, add some lags, the null station power again, unit root, with differences. Larger, reject the null stationarity, add some lags, and again the null is rejected. The null that series has unit root is rejected. In other words, the series is stationary. So that was the question number 5, and then let's check last question number 6. So here we are doing the, here let's look what the exercise says. So in the last exercise, we're testing whether the interest rate spread we applied in the earlier exercise, I believe that was the exercise number 3 and 4. So here we're testing whether this interest rate spread contains a unit root. So let's test that. That's the data. So let's let the Akai get choose the optimal information criteria. That's the test statistic below than the critical value. So here the null hypothesis is that series has unit root. Here the null stays in power, the series has unit root. But how about if we just used some random number of lags? For example, this could be economically thought to control the seasonality and the interest rate. No such impact shouldn't be there, but let's just assume, let's just test that. Okay. In other words, so here our null hypothesis is that the series has unit root. We calculate the test statistic and it is higher than the critical value. So here it is, we reject the null that, and the series is stationary. So here most likely we just added some additional lags in the model and we got statistically significant results. But there is no reason to, there's no economic reason to add these lags into the test. So most likely it is the case that here we are rejecting the null peak of some spurious underlying correlation in the series. So here, this is there it has to it is more likely that there's some problem with the model here. The model is not able to capture the underlying structure of the data. So this is not a reliable result, even though it's statistically significant. B part. So let's test the unit fruit for the long-term interest rates. The statistic smaller than the critical value, the null stays in power. That is, it has a unit root. And then let's do the same test for the short-term interest rate. Again, the null stays in power. When we compare these, the null stays in power, the series has unit root. So D part is about the co-integration. Yeah, that. So actually we already talked about the D part. So it when we added these lags into the spread, it became stationary in a statistical sense, but it is most likely that it is some spurious correlation that results to the stationarity of the series compared to the version that we applied lower number of lags. Then the E part. Those are the series again, and then we test the unit root again. Interest rate spread. So interest rate spread again. Now we calculate again. The statistic way smaller than the critical values. The null stays in power. The series has unit root. Then what about if we tried again, increase the number of the lags here earlier? The series was stationary. Now, no longer stationary. The statistic way smaller than the critical value. The null stays in power. It com series contains unit root. So here we adjusted the sample a little bit and we got a different result. So most likely the earlier result, the spurious correlation, the earlier results of statistical significant where I talked about the spurious correlation was the case that indeed the series had this spurious correlation because we changed the size of the sample and the results changed. So there's something happening in the underlying data we're not taking into account. And because of that, it result a statistically significant result. What about the long-term interest rates? The statistic smaller than the critical value, null stays in power, unit root. And the short-term interest rate here, the short-term interest rate is actually a little bit higher than the critical threshold. That means we reject the null of the unit root at the 5% level. So at 5% level, the series is stationary. So for short, in the sixth exercise, we got a mixed result. And most likely, this mixed result resulted from that we did not specify our underlying data well enough. So some structural change affected the results of the unit group test. So this time I speeded up these exercises really quickly through because I talked here on my own. Nobody was there, so this time it went like this. Nevertheless, have a nice rest of the week, and the next exercise is again next week. See ya.